Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take it. It's all over.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground and pound.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans and Sean Dazay from Triumph MMA, covering everything in the world of Breaking Bad and why it's better than Dexter.
That's what we're doing.
That is what we're doing.
Actually,
today.
That would only take like 10 seconds. Why Breaking Bad's better than Dexter. We better have a lot more prepared for the show.
We do have quite a bit to cover this week, although it seems like a week where we could essentially just take it off and let Sean do his geopolitical talk show that he's always wanted to do.
Yeah, go ahead. What do you think about the Congress shutting down this week?
Well, I think that the people that have federal jobs that elected these officials are not getting paid, and the people that got elected are getting paid, and I think there's something wrong with that picture.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
No problem.
More next week on the show.
I did a good job, right?
No, that was great.
That was exactly what we wanted in our coverage of our continued coverage of the shutdown in the government.
A ton of hate mail for no real reason like everything else.
All right. So this week, the UFC got a big win in New York City as they a judge has ruled that they are allowed to proceed with their case against the state of New York to lift the ban on mixed martial arts.
So they get to sue the state of New York.
They do, because even a judge can look at that and go, oh, so let me get this straight. They can box there. Oh, yeah, you can box there. We can do karate there. Yep, you can do karate.
Yeah.
You can do kickboxing. Yep, you can do that. And you can smash a human being in the face with a steel chair while wrapping his neck with barbed wire. You can do that as well? Yeah. But we can't do MMA. No. Yeah, I'm going to let them sue you then. And that's kind of how it went down. And so I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV. I know your cousin is. We should have probably brought him in.
Well, he's reading a contract right now.
Well, okay. Well, he can read that and get back to us. And so there we go. And I think this is obviously things on the list that Dana and the Fertittas want to get done. This has to be, at this point, extremely high.
Are they going to make like a huge example by laying down a really thick lawsuit, like kind of beat them up a little bit?
I don't necessarily know that, but I know that anybody who's been in the fight game knows that there's one place on earth that if you don't have an event at this particular place, you really, in the history of combat sports, save for having an event in, let's say, the Pantheon, if it still existed,
right.
Madison Square Garden is about as close as you can get.
Yeah. I mean, that's the number one spot, like you just said.
Every boxer, every fighter, sure. every artist wants
like
to...
Barry Manilow play there,
yeah,
right?
Everybody wants
and
to be...
can't have UFC there? That's,
right, exactly.
I don't think they're going to go for revenge in this case. I think their best revenge here would be winning the lawsuit and be able to run events there. That doesn't mean they're not going to spend a lot of money to do it, and that doesn't mean New York's not going to make them spend a lot of money to do it, along with, I believe they have co-plaintiffs in this. They actually have fighters on board as part of this lawsuit.
There's, I think, 8 fighters on board.
I know John Jones, Gina Carano are a couple of them that are on there. And, you know, that's to put a real face on this lawsuit. So when you get in front of a judge or you get in front of a jury and you get in the courtroom, you've got a real face on, this person can't make a living here. This person can't make a living here. This person can't make a living here. Now, do those people have to make a living in New York? No. But if Floyd Money Mayweather is allowed to, and he doesn't because he doesn't like the taxes and he knows how to make money,
right.
But if he's
right.
allowed to fight there at Madison Square Garden, which he is under the combat regulations in the state of New York, then this guy should be too. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see where the money comes from here. I mean, you've said it a lot. You blame unions, Sean, for this whole deal in New York.
Yeah, those union people.
Well, you said it on the show. Do you look at me like I'm pulling this out of nowhere?
No, I mean, blame's a pretty heavy word.
Well you called out the United Food Workers or whoever.
Well, calling out is different than blaming, in my opinion.
Okay.
We're right back. We are right back to where we started 4 minutes ago talking about the shutdown of the government. Look, shutting down and going home are two very different. We're here. We're just not doing any work. So
okay.
we're not technically shut down.
So you don't blame the union troubles that the Fertittas have for what's going on in New York?
look, whatever issues they had between each other, all I'm saying is I called out on the union. I'm like, yeah, this is messed up.
I think the unions got to him in between that last show where he mentioned all of this stuff and today.
And that, so you must see the new car I'm driving.
Yeah, we saw the new car. I like the watch. That's all. Those are all nice touches.
Yours too.
And you're not buried in Metro Detroit, so that's also a thing.
Yeah.
That's happening.
So the big news, and we will keep you abreast of when this happens and what the fallout's going to be. And more importantly, when I will get to see Anderson Silva and John Jones fight at Madison Square Garden.
Is that what they're going for?
Well, that's what I'm going for. It's total supposition on my part, but that's what I'm calling
for. It out there.
I'm throwing it out there. Speaking of supposition, over the weekend, we got a hidden gem. The only real MMA action over the weekend was Bellator with Joe Warren returning after that medical scare, and he obviously won and continues on in his...
Who?
Exactly.
That's not nice.
However, aside from Bellator happening, we had one more gem that happened, and that was that Wanderlei Silva decided that he was going to film his own reality show where he runs up to Chael Sonnen at the Mr. Olympia Expo and decides to scream at him. I would love to play it for you because it's in Portuguese. However, it's nothing but curses in Portuguese. I will tell you this. It is on our Facebook page. You can see it. Both the one that Bud Wright, one of our fans, posted. He posted the clean Wanderlei version. We have posted the more authentic looking and thus makes you buy into it more cell phone version. But the gist of it is this. Wanderlei runs up to him, screams some stuff in Portuguese, and Chael, in his awesomeness, clearly... And I love the fact that he knows Portuguese so well because that was... Not slow.
No.
He ran up to him, screamed some stuff at him, and Chael responds in kind, and here we go. And so it leaves you with two things. Number one, was it staged? And who was it staged by? And what's the point?
Well, you heard some of Chael Sonnen's response on UFC Tonight earlier in the week, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Okay, because he said, I'm all for Wanderlei having a little fun, but three things. First off, if you're going to do a publicity stunt, do not bring your own camera. It looks staged, which it was. This is what Chael Sonnen says. It insults your audience. Assume they're going to connect the dots, show up somewhere where a camera is, and then go into your little routine. So we know
spoken by a master.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Mean, honestly, like he's right. If you're going to do it, don't hire a little guy. A little
yes. And before
Randy
you
to
before you
around.
Get to step two, let's set some context here. These two have been verbally sparring, if you can even call it that. Chael has been verbally sparring. Wanderlei has been attempting to learn his verbal jab, so to speak, for a long time. This culminated in a car ride where the two of them had to go to a UFC event together, and it got. Tense, not like this video is tense, but it started there and then has continued as Chael continues to, if he's going to fight Sean, for example, he will throw verbal jabs at you and then occasionally, out of nowhere, go after Wanderlei for a second just to see if he can get him to bite, then go right back after you. Apparently, at this point, he has got him riled up, which brings us to number two.
Oh, yeah. He says in this country, in this industry, if you refuse to fight a guy like you did me, you forfeit your right to then talk about that person in this type of fashion. Accosting somebody in public can be regrettable. Accosting a gangster can be hazardous. You have to wonder, did Wanderlei think he was going to get in Chael Sonnen's head with this? Because anybody at this point, I don't want to see what it would take to get inside Chael Sonnen's head at this point. I'll say it that way.
I think the best thing to do, anyone that wants to fight Chael Sonnen, just don't even attempt to get in his head. Just sign the contract, and that could probably be the most offensive thing. He's like, oh, you signed the contract, so you want to fight me for real.
Well,
I
like,
think that's
I mean,
the only way you can offend him.
Look
now.
At Rashad. They're fighting. You haven't heard either one of them really...
Because he signed the contract.
Just sign. I'll be there.
Right,
Chael, go yell at whoever you want. I'll be there. All right? Are we good with that? Which leads me to the other point about this. I'm not really sure... what Wanderlei is doing, and that's why there's some conspiracy theories, and that's why Dana was running around this week and got caught up, and they asked him, hey, you know, what did you think about this thing? And he said, these two guys are professionals. I didn't expect them to go toe-to-toe. You would never want to see that. If they did, obviously we would have to cut them both because we just don't do that sort of thing. The follow-up question was, hey, and here comes the conspiracy, what do you think about Wanderlei and Chael doing a season of Tough in Brazil?
In Brazil?
In Brazil.
Sending Chael Sonnen into Brazil.
So Dana's response was laughing it off, although we know in past Dana White, that means
his eyebrows were
right.
They're
raising. That might be something that they're already working on. His way to fix it was he was going to, when they were going to film, drop Chael Sonnen off via helicopter. He could film what they wanted to film, pick him up, and then take him back to a safer place like Cuba.
Yeah, don't ever let him unhook from that line from the helicopter. I don't think that would happen simply because he's. Well, I was gonna say he's not as big a commodity in Brazil, but man, they want to see somebody murder him.
You don't think he's a big
commodity? No, you're right. And
could you imagine, like, if you're Chael Sonnen, and I don't think he thinks like this, but the TV tension of your Chael Sonnen not really knowing if your team at any point is actually just gonna turn on you and fight you.
Right.
Well, think about the when they pick fighters, the fighters will probably turn and be like, no, and they just attack him during practice. Right. That's all
year,
of them.
Yeah,
know?
Remember that year Ken Shamrock coached? It's that times a thousand.
Yeah, and then Chael will be like, all right, I'll be the coach if it's a bunch of 125ers, because then I can handle 20 of those guys.
I can take about six of you at the same time.
He just talks crap about his whole team. You bunch of Brazilians. Get off your butts and quit scooting around the cage and fight.
So if it's not tough, which you don't think is a possibility.
I don't know. I think you'd have to go, like you said, find a line of demarcation. Cuba is not out of the question. I don't know if you want to go to Mexico City.
Right.
Colombia.
So
safer places for Chael Sonnen.
let's get to this point. Vanderlei has said since that video, I even think he said in the video, he doesn't care what happens in the Rashad fight. He'll fight him even on a loss. So do you think Chael's going to do this? Is this Chael's next thing? Because Chael isn't driving.
I can't get my head around any other Chael fight other than this. You know this.
Right, but we have one.
I know. I can't get my head around
when
why
is Chael fighting Rashad?
It's never in my head.
Oh, okay.
No, that's fine.
No, I think it's early next year, right?
Like February or something.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. I can't get my head around the fact that, like Eric said earlier in the show, he seems that he'll talk about the guy he's fighting and Rashad this and Rashad that every once in a while. Anderson Silva sucks. And then he goes right back to what he's saying. And then he'll go, Vanderlei Silva sucks. And then he goes back to what he's saying.
And Silva sucks.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly
what he gets to.
It's November 16th in Las Vegas.
Oh,
that's a lot sooner than I thought.
Yeah, it's a lot sooner than February.
That's right around the corner, guys.
Right.
I thought that was in February for some reason.
Nope.
That's the GSP fight.
That is the GSP fight.
Oh, the co-main event.
Yes, sir.
Nice. Yeah.
That's a waste of Chow.
I don't think you need
to co-main event, Chow. You could have
look at this guy, Super Bowl him. Super Bowl him.
November 16th too. That's not even that big a card usually.
It's their 20th anniversary, kids.
Yeah.
No, I mean Super Bowl the Vanderlei and
I'm totally with you. But I guess that leads me to my next question. We got a couple minutes in this segment. We're looking past Rashad. Is this a given?
I always look past Rashad.
I'm being serious. Is this a given?
I am being serious.
Okay.
I do. I think Chael will handle Rashad with no problems.
I think so, too.
If Rashad wins, it's going to be a lay and pray, boring.
You realize Rashad went 5 rounds with the champion, right?
You realize that Chael Sonnen broke the champion's toe and that the referee didn't see it.
Exactly.
An uncrowned champion.
Technically.
And you realize Rashad lost to Little Nog.
I do realize
after he fought John Jones.
I understand that.
Okay,
I was trying to set some context before Ken turned the UFC into Game of Thrones, where we have different kings and different realms of the same weight class that are uncrowned. Is that what you said?
Rashad
uncrowned?
He's uncrowned, yes. He's not from the north of the wall in Europe.
Yeah, he is not. He is certainly not north of the wall.
In
yes.
Florida, where it's nice and warm.
You could make an argument. We've got an American champion, a Swedish champion.
This guy, look at him.
You've got a couple of different champions in that light heavy division. They're fighting at 205, right?
Yes, they are fighting at 205.
They both kind of moved around a little bit. And,
I would catch weight that one. Go 195 for fun.
I think Chael wants to stay at 205 if he can. He's got his better fights there at this point. And I think he wants to, too, at some point. I mean, like you said, Eric, he's been talking about Vanderlei Silva for the better part of a year. That's why every time he has another fight, I can't get my head around it, because he just keeps talking crap to Vanderlei Silva. So I think he also wants Silva to come up to 205. I know he's been there before, but Vanderlei said he wants to be at 185. I think Vanderlei, this is his last fight that he's got that's going to make some money. So I'm wondering
if
this isn't a big plan on his part. He's got to get that fight made, because Chael just keeps talking about him and then goes and makes other fights.
And man,
he can't seem to get the fight.
But how interesting does that make it? And we've talked about this a little bit, that Chael has become an upper echelon gatekeeper. You know, if he beats,
he makes you money.
Not only does he make you money, but if he beats Rashad and then he beats Vanderlei, not that Vanderlei's in contention, but Vanderlei is an icon in the sport. Rashad, like you said, and we just said, fought for a title at some point. He's, you know, if he cleans out that division, do we really want to see Jones Chael again?
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean,
I do. I'll take
sure.
I'll take it any time.
You know, maybe the second time around he can maybe do a different game plan.
He'll plan to be taller.
He could dress as a Swedish Viking and fight him that way. All right. When we come back, some other stuff going on. We've got perhaps a new Mayweather fight. Yoshinokami no longer has a job, and Joe Rogan's got an interesting take on the 10-point must system. We'll cover it next. It's Way of the Warrior.
Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Sean Dezay from Triumph MMA, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And we asked last week, you know, Mayweather makes it through Canelo Alvarez, what's going to be next for him? It appears that his contract with Showtime takes him to 49-0. And of those bouts, it appeared earlier in this week that Amir Khan, a fight that a lot of people wanted to see that a couple years back.
Yeah, a couple years back, you know, when Amir was had a lot of steam.
And so then we get this announcement. Some people jump on and go, is Floyd taking the easy road? Blah, 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 blah. And now the Khan camp is saying that they're fighting in December against Devon Alexander.
Well, I mean, against Alexander for Amir Khan, that's a good fight. But
that is a good fight, but wouldn't you take the bigger money fight against Mayweather? And we see this happen in MMA, and as I've said before, I enjoy the sport of boxing. The nuance and the politics I'm not very great at, and I don't know if this sort of thing happens ever, but it just seems like if Floyd came in here right now in the middle of the show and said, would you like to fight me, I would say yes.
Yeah, because he'll have a duffel bag full of $1 million,
right.
And he'll just throw it at you
right
now.
I'll go to camp. I'll
tax free,
yeah, whatever. Oh.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. But yeah, definitely.
Well, nobody would know. If we're on the radio. They wouldn't know how much is in there. Right. We pay some taxes.
If you're Amir Khan, too, you're one of those boxers that if you're not a hardcore boxing fan, you sort of think you know his name when you hear it now.
Yes.
And don't you want to, as that guy, put your name back at the top of boxing? There's only one guy that can do that now. That is Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. For Amir, this is the best opportunity ever. I can imagine, like, how much his eyes lit up when he heard, hey, Mayweather wants to fight you, and boom, yeah, I'll do it right away. He knows. One, he knows he's not going to beat Mayweather, so he knows it's a good, good paycheck. Bottom line, that's it.
Yeah, but as a fighter, do you think a guy ever thinks he can't beat somebody?
There's no way. Yeah, well, like, for example,
you and I would say there's no way he can beat him. Do you think Amir Khan, though, walks into that ring thinking he can't beat him? I think Amir Khan walks in there the same way so many have against Floyd Money Mayweather and say, I'm going to be the guy to beat this guy and make my name on this guy.
I think now it's safe to say that any contender or anyone who's going to fight Mayweather will be like, listen, I don't want to sound like the past six guys. They all say the same thing. I need a different song here. I need to say something totally different.
So what are they going to sing? Thanks for the money, Floyd? What,
they need to do something different because they all say the same thing. Oh, when I'm different. I'm this much power. I got this much speed. I got, you know, no. It just doesn't work against Mayweather. I'm sorry.
What do you think he should say then?
I think he should say, you know what?
I'm here to lose.
I am here to collect a paycheck. Give me my money.
I think he should probably go up to Mayweather and say, hey, you tell me what to say because I need to make this more interesting.
Mayweather is going to say, you're the one to beat me. You've got this that I never faced before. You got this.
Because it's not like you can be like, oh, well, I trained, you know, Amir can't say, well, I was Pacquiao's sparring partner for so long. You know, because that does, you know, Pacquiao's fighting, I forget who he's fighting now, but I just heard the announcement.
Yes.
But the bottom line is this, like, wait, I think Pacquiao's fighting Alexander. No.
It is. Well, here's what is interesting about the statement from the Khan camp is when you get to the very bottom of it, it says, contrary to this story, Amir Khan is currently in a training camp in San Francisco with the aim of fighting in December against Alexander once an agreement can be reached. So he's already balking at this fight that he's rumored to be in.
So he left Freddie Roach then.
For another, at this point, it appears, yes. Okay. But at this point, he doesn't have this fight signed either. So I guess he's going to, right, he'll take the big money fight, right?
He's got to.
Right?
He's got to, yeah.
There's no way he does this.
I think he's coming off of a loss against Garcia, too. So.
And how
Amir
Khan?
Yeah.
You know, and how?
Julio Diaz.
Diaz, sorry. Yeah,
he beat him with a decision.
Well, he dropped it. He dropped him pretty well, too. That was almost a knockout.
Yeah, that and it was in Yorkshire. So, I mean, yeah, he's got to take the big
money
fight.
Yeah, he has to take the fight.
And he's got to take.
The only way he can make money is if he fights in the UK, obviously.
Even if he loses to Floyd Money Mayweather, it's going to help him make more money even outside of that fight.
Exactly.
Sure.
I mean, we're going to all want to see what happens with Canelo Alvarez in his next fight, aren't we? I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Only because you've watched, and we talked about this, so we won't spend a lot of time, but you watched Canelo tear through people and then watched that he couldn't really even touch Mayweather. And so when you see a fighter like that.
But Canelo and Amir Khan, watch what happens.
That would be a great fight.
It would be a murder. That's what it would be. I used to like Amir Khan. I really did.
Apparently, we get the sense that
No, I don't hate him. I think he, you know, like, there's no way you can develop a good chin. You can't, you know.
No, you can't. No, and that's one of the myths about
chin
fighting.
Is very
that,
suspect.
You know,
now.
That you, if you're Andre Arlovski, you're forget it. You're
done,
Andre Arlovski.
You know? Amir
you're
is
taking,
done.
You're taking knees.
Wow,
you're
you guys are
knees.
Taking shots left and right at fighters. Amir Khan, Andre Arlovski.
You don't think Andre Arlovski has a weak chin?
I didn't feel like he needed to be dragged into this today. That's all I'm saying.
He's got
to
be the weakest chin in MMA. Who else would you pick?
Really? Come on.
Who? I jump in here, gentlemen. Who's weaker than...
Kimbo Slice.
Has a weaker chin. You only saw him get punched once. I don't know that that's...
And it only took once, and he went down with Seth Petrozelli. 5 years ago this
5 years ago today.
Way.
Let me pour some out for our...
Yeah, family. I mean, because we're on that topic, I would have I would have to think more. But, I mean, there's other guys out there. But Arlovski definitely has
weaker than Arlovski.
I'm sure there's got to be at least one guy out there that's you just touch it one time and
Rage Ring or something named something along those
lines. No,
I mean
the UFC.
No,
in the UFC, like
not,
someone.
Yeah,
you know.
not
Crazy Cage Combat Saturday.
Not from somebody from Cage Rage in the UK that you. Never
I didn't even say Cage Rage. Now you just bagged the whole organization. This is getting worse as we keep going.
Because you're making,
well, not too many people know what Cage Rage is. So
mostly because you were making up cage names that didn't actually exist.
Right. I was trying to be nice.
Okay. All right.
I'm the only one on the show today, apparently, trying to do
that's
that.
He's PC today,
that's
right?
That's clearly the facts. So earlier this week, there was an interview with Joe Rogan, and since we don't really have a lot of MMA action to talk about, I thought this was an interesting thing to bring up, especially in light of the Alexander Jones fight, and that is the 10-point must system and how it's flawed. And Rogan has said this more than one time, and so this isn't necessarily new news, but I always find it, when he explains it, very interesting news that came over from boxing, the idea being the winner of said round needs to get 10 points, thus the name, 10-point must system. Joe goes on to explain how it seems to fit much better in 12 3-minute rounds than it does for 3 5-minute rounds, because you get in a situation like we did with Alexander Gustafsson and John Jones, where you score one round 10-9, the other round 9-10. And there's some nuance in there that makes it difficult to view them as rounds. And we talked about this last week at length, that we could all sit down, and if our only job was to score the rounds, we'd score the rounds, we put that away, and then we go back and watch the tape, and then I ask each one of us who won the fight. We all pick, and then we pull out our scorecards. There's a pretty good chance they're not going to match, and that's a flawed system to me.
Well, I think there's an interesting part of this system, too, is because it is a holdover from boxing. It's 12 3-minute rounds, or 7, or 5,
sure,
whatever's likely in that realm of boxing and that level of boxing. The problem in boxing is if you would get a knockdown and you do it a couple times, you're going to win the fight. So there's a much better system in place there when you have guys winning by a point a round and you have so many rounds. I think the system's fine, just you're never going to see a judge give a 10-8 or a 10-7 when they should. 10-7, you damn near have to kill a guy, right?
Yeah, but you don't. But I guess maybe that's the problem, is that you have this, maybe it's a dual problem. You have a problem with the system in that if you and I fight, and in that first round you outbox me, you don't knock me down or anything, but you clearly...
I land a couple more jabs and that's
you
it.
You clearly
that's
outbox
10-9.
Me. That's a 10-9. Then the very next round, I take you down 4 times, ground and pound you, and grind you to death against the cage for 5 minutes.
Probably a 10-9 for you.
Yeah, and a 10-9 for me.
That's not fair.
But those are two totally different fights. If you saw those fights on the street, you would just think those are two guys who are sparring in round one. And in round two, that's a guy on top of another guy trying to kill him.
And that should be a 10-8 or maybe a 10-7.
Depending on, yeah.
And then the closest first round I could ever, you know, compare this to would be when Gray Maynard fought Frankie Edgar. When he dropped him numerous times, and Frankie was literally out. He was out of that first round.
In that first round.
And I think that was a 10-8, which could have easily been a 10-7.
I don't remember, but
I
remember that there was some argument, because to the second part of this problem, is you have judges who don't have any idea what's going on. on top of the fact that you've got the system that's kind of deeply flawed.
Well, what's interesting here is you say that could have maybe easily been it's never easily a 10-7. I don't know if we've seen a 10-7.
No, that round, if there was ever a 10-7 round, that was the round.
But that's the problem. Yeah. There's not. And you've got such a difference that can happen inside a fight with two guys. And if these fights are essentially being scored by the round, by a point, that's never going to work for MMA as well as it does for boxing. This should be simple. I mean, a lot of people talk, we need half-point rounds. No, we don't.
No, we don't.
We just need to be accepting of the fact that maybe a fight's going to be 30-21, because that would freak people out, too.
Yes, and I wonder, Ken, if maybe, and we've sort of hit on this from time to time, if maybe some of the, not necessarily rules from Pride, but maybe some of the feel from Pride would need to come over. And that is, they were told to judge that on not only the two rounds, the 10-minute round and then the 5-minute round, and if you needed another one, we went to other ones, but kind of the overall feel of the fight.
There was no rounds, if I remember, in the old Pride judging. It was just the judge would score the bout for one fight or the other, if I remember correctly.
In the old ones.
Right,
so maybe, yeah.
Because that wouldn't have been fair when you have 10, 5, and 5.
Right.
So they would just, at the end of the fight, who won the fight? 2 out of 3 judges score this fight for Sakuraba. That'd be it.
And there was no score. It was just you picked a fighter. And that might get us closer to seeing the equivalent of what would be a 10-5 or a 10. I mean, if you go back to that Gray Maynard-Frankie fight, he wasn't really even in that first round.
He was a zombie.
You know, you could say 10-3. I mean, that's a real number you could pick. They just never do.
And that's what I don't understand. The way the scoring's set up right now, we might as well have 2 points. Who got two and who got one?
It should be binary, 1 and 0.
Yeah.
You won the round, you won the round.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even need to go to two. That's all we're essentially using at this point. And we've got 10 points we can use. And we're not even down to where we can consistently get a 10-8 round. And MMA, where you got a guy who could get knocked down 4 times and be beat up in an entire round, and he scores the same as the guy in the round before that landed 3 more jabs. That's not a fair system.
You know, there's a lot of, so if you're talking about just straight punches, in the amateur boxing, they don't do the 10-point system. What they do is they just add up the points mm-hmm. per round. So you can have a 38-14 round, if that makes, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You get 1 extra point for a knockdown.
Right.
So like, let's say you're, ELB's, you know, teeing off on me, and you're up to about 38 points, and I knock you down. I get 1 point, so that 12, now I'm 13 points, but you're still 38 to my 13. So you still win that round. So it is a little bit flawed in that sense as well. So I think the biggest answer I think needs to happen is a lot of, and I've said this before, fighters that are completely retired should give back. They need to come in and start coming, be judges and,
sure.
and help out the refs. And I understand it's a state athletic controlled commission. You know, the UFC has nothing.
You can't work for the UFC and do this, and so there's
right.
that. But I think another example of this would be, look at George's fight. You know, any of them. Most people call them boring, but I would say
GSP?
GSP. I would say if you're looking at a 10-point must system, he would average 10-8 rounds against his opponent. In my mind, if we're scoring on points, if he is able to hold you down on the ground and you cannot get up for 5 minutes, that's 10-8. That's not 10-9.
Right.
I mean, maybe he's not doing a ton of damage, so it's not a 10-7, but if he takes you down and controls you for 5 straight minutes, that to me should be, that's where we start at a 10-8. You're down, dude.
You didn't do anything.
You
weren't able to
anything.
Stand up.
Like, because we've talked about this at the gym. We're like, all right, well, you should probably get an extra point. Or another guy gets deducted, depending on how you want to look at it. Like, if I knock you down, I should get an extra point for that. Or if I knock you down, you should get a point taken away. But then if you take me down, you should get that point back. You know, you go back and forth. And then people are like, well, what happens if it's just like a flash knockdown? I'm like, well, then the judges need to be educated what's a flash knockdown and what's not.
Yeah, but it's not a flash knockdown. It's MMA. That's going to happen.
But no, flash knockdowns do happen in MMA, but we're talking about real knock, like when Frankie Edgar got dropped,
sure.
those were real knockdowns.
But you're talking about adding math to this, which seems to get way more complicated.
And it does. And that's why I was like, you know what? I don't have an answer. It's just,
I think an answer is that we need to, you had the answer. You said something could easily have been a 10-7 round. Let's make it to point where, we get to the point where there's a 10-7 round. Because that was a 10-7 round. I bet you, we use 3 points. This gets cleaned up a lot. We're only using 1, essentially.
Yes, and then that's why I'm saying, Ken, when you look at GSP's fights where he dominates people, I'm not talking about the Condit fight where you have a wealth of scores or should have had a wealth of scores.
Right.
I'm talking about, you know, take the Koscheck fight, you know, where he controls Koscheck for the entire thing, but isn't able to finish him. He controls Dan for the entire fight and tries to break Dan. All those things should have been 10-8s or 10-7s or whatever you want to start with, not just 10-9s, because, again, now you're it's just 0-1.
The other guy did nothing. Yeah, it's just 0-1, and the next round, we'll go back to, let's say, the Dan Hardy fight. He's able to maybe knock GSP down in a round, and he did the same thing in that round, according to the score that GSP did, by manhandling him for an entire round. Again, that's not a fair system. I don't think you need to get rid of the 10-point must, but you need to reevaluate the perception of it and the scores used within the 10-point must, because there's other there's 10 points there. Use them.
Yes, and there are 10 points, and I think, Ken, you're right. You can go, if you start using 3 points, you scare the crap out of a lot of fighters, but I would even push it farther, and maybe that's too much, but you know, maybe that Frankie Gray round one is 10-5. You know, Frankie, you're going to have to finish this fight. You've lost this fight.
Yeah.
Sorry. You lost it.
Yeah, if I was judging that one, I'm like, I don't care how much he tries to come back, unless he does the exact same damage in some other round. Gray Maynard, he whooped that ass, bottom line.
And then you go to the Gustafson-Jones fight, you've got a much different fight on your
hands. Oh, yeah, that's totally different. Yeah, that one was very hard to judge.
Very hard to judge, but if we talk about damage, there may have been some 10-8 rounds in there, or a 10-8 round, or a 10-7 round.
Yeah.
And if there's
I think that fourth round, in that fourth minute of the fourth round, I think that might get John Jones in that fight a 10-9 round, whereas earlier in the fight you might have called a round 10-8 for Gustafsson.
Right.
When he was able to damage
Jones.
Yeah,
that could have been
a 10-8 or 10-7, right? Not a 10-9?
A 10-8 for Jones, because you said 10-9.
No, I mean in that minute, Jones could have gotten back to the point where he would win that round by a point. But
gotcha.
He only won a minute of that round, essentially.
Yes.
Okay, so you did he gets that round 10-9. That wouldn't be something that Gustafsson had to worry about as much, because he probably had a 10-8 earlier in that fight.
Right.
Because of the damage.
And then on the flip side of that, Alexander's coach could be like, hey, that could have been a 10-8 round, so you need to, like, dominate this fifth round now, you know? So that, and it can make things a lot more exciting. And then also, getting the corners, the official scorecard of every round. I mean, we've talked about that before. They do it in some boxing shows where, like...
And I don't get... there are two things that I don't understand, and we'll take a break here in a second. I don't understand that. I don't understand why you can't show instantly the scores to the corners, and I also
that's what they're asking them to score it by round. It should be done before that next round even starts.
Yes, and I don't know why we can't do that in the age of the technology that we have. And I don't think it's a bad thing that somebody, if it's not the corners, maybe it is just the corners and not the judges, because it would bias it, but if we're doing fight metric, why isn't anyone seeing it till it's over?
Right,
what's the point of the fight metric if you can't actually use it for anything?
It'd be cool if I was cornering one of my guys, and every round I knew what the scorecard was, I know exactly what to do for the next round.
Or, I mean, but now think about it. If you have this data, you have the scorecard, and you have the fight metric, and you can see how it differs, so you can maybe make a different plan.
Well, your devil's advocate portion of that would be simply that if you've got a fighter who's so far ahead that he can't lose, you've got the fight basically at a stalemate, and you could have a guy simply running for the last round or two. You don't want that to necessarily happen.
Yeah, but it would have been exciting up until then, because if you're talking about a mile, like it's a big landslide difference, right? So he put in a lot of work to get that big difference.
No, you're right, but do you want a fighter to know he's up 3 rounds to 2? Three rounds to none?
I think if it's that far and away, Ken, I think most fighters know that they're that far and away.
I think it's pretty obvious.
All right. When we come back, we had some very sad news in the world of mixed martial arts over the weekend on two different fronts. We'll talk about both of them next. It's Way of the Warrior.
Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show. Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans and Sean Dizay in the world of Triumph MMA. That's where Sean comes from. You can find us as part of the Fight Fans Radio Network and on the iHeartRadio talk platform. And, of course, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook by searching Wow Show. Talked about this on Friday late. Fighter in Brazil died making weight at Shooto 49, I believe it was. Consequently, they canceled the event and then went on to figure out what exactly had happened to make this event come to fruition. Comes to find out that the fighter was taking diuretics, not telling his coach, not telling his family. One of the friends in the camp knew that he was taking it. He was 2 pounds over, taking these diuretics, and obviously the worst thing happened. Now, if you're not into the American version of mixed martial arts, diuretics are completely illegal. The one thing that I talked about last Friday that you guys weren't around to talk about that I found interesting is that NCAA wrestling, there's a limit to the amount of weight that you can lose. And we've talked about this from time to time, that wouldn't it be nice if the UFC would check in on these guys from time to time and go, hey, Sean, I know you walk around at 310 and fight at 155. Wanted to kind of see how you were doing in your plight to drop 150 pounds in 8 weeks.
That's my secret, and I'm keeping it.
I know.
Is that something, though, that the UFC should have to do for fighters that aren't
should
that?
Have to do?
Yeah.
No, I don't think they should have to do it at all. But
these are grown men. The guy was taking pills. The guy's in a camp with guys like, I believe, Henan Barao and others, a camp that knows what they're doing, and he's doing something stupid on his own. He ends up having a stroke, I think, because of the possible effects of the weight cutting and the diuretics. I think at a certain point you have to put an onus on the men who decide to do this. And I know Dana White has come out and said no fight is worth dying over. Do you want a limit that's in place in college because they're still essentially kids? I mean, that's the thing, too. They're young men. They're going into adulthood, but they're still kids, and you've still got protections there in the NCAA. You get an all-level of NCAA sports that you don't necessarily get when you get from the NCAA and college football to the NFL or basketball into the NBA. You've got that protection there. Is that something that we should be monitoring? I mean, Sean's a grown man. If he wants to fight at 155 after walking around at 200 pounds, and he can do it right and he can do it safely, is that fair to him to say no because some people are stupid about it and don't think about it? You can't do it.
I agree with you. Individually, you have to be responsible for everything that you do, whether you're doing peds, whether you're diuretics, how you weight cut, your sauna, steam room, hot bath, whatever it is that you're doing, you're ultimately responsible for what it is that you do. And you have to do it safe. And I guarantee you that guy, if he would have just listened to his body, take the 20% penalty, whatever it is, you know, because there's been times where I've done a weight cut and I can feel my heart just, you know, my heart rate's up. I'm like, I need to get out. I need to calm down, relax, cool off a little bit, and then I'll get back in there a little bit later. So it's, you know, I couldn't even imagine being on a diuretic and you're 2 pounds away. And I mean, just the frantic pace that your body's going through.
Sure.
I just couldn't even imagine it. It's sad. It really is sad. But, you know, pick a weight class that it sucks that if you're 5'7" and you got to fight 185, I get that. That's not fun, but you know, you have to be smart, you know, and if that's what it is, I mean, Paul Harris, is a bad example, but other short guys have fought in heavier weight classes. And maybe over time, you know, cause I fought welterweight once, and then over time I slowly got down to 145, and I was like, how did I ever make 145? Well, I did it over a stretch of a year and a half. I didn't do it in a month and a half. So,
and a lot of guys who fight for the UFC know that, and this is going to be a bigger problem in other organizations and places where guys are either taking fights on short notice or don't have the financial resources maybe to put that diet into place that would essentially last a year
round. It costs money to cut weight.
I mean, that's
of course. It costs money to cut weight.
It costs money to hire Mike Dolce. I get all of those things. I guess the question I'm asking is when you see and it's a larger question, and I get it's a little bit heavy for a show like this where we continually mess around for most of the time. But when you see the NFL of MMA, which is the UFC, and you want to get there, there's a tremendous amount of pressure. You've got a number of fighters in your stable, Sean, that are trying to reach that goal. And every time something goes wrong in a camp that they think that they're knocking on the door of whatever, Bellator, UFC, Cage Rage, whatever, anything that derails that adds stress and pressure to their life. So I don't know a lot about this particular fighter, but maybe that 2 pounds was a huge difference. That 20% purse penalty was a huge problem. And so all I'm asking is it the UFC's responsibility? No. Do they need to have any oversight? Absolutely not. What I'm saying is when you see there's a couple fighters in the UFC that drop a ridiculous amount of weight that I'm going to tell you right now, in my non-medical opinion, is terrible for their body, and they're going to pay the price when they're 40 or 50.
Sure.
And so
how realistically, though, do they do that? How realistically can they monitor weight outside well, these, of but, actual the, weigh-ins.
These couple fighters that I'm thinking of, and Sean knows exactly who I'm talking about, aren't marquee fighters. They wouldn't miss them if they cut them. So if you don't want to fight...
Lyson Tebow.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to fight at 205, we don't need you because we don't want you cutting 60 pounds to get down to 185 or whatever he cuts. That's stupid. And we at
yeah,
some...
but how do you actually do that, though? And I'm pushing and prodding on this because I'm trying to be devil's advocate in a situation where you have a guy who can do it. You have a guy like Anderson Silva,
you
who some people have said
it, have
walked at 220, 225, and he's dropping 40, 45 pounds when he was getting closer to his fights when he was younger. I mean, he doesn't do that as much anymore, but that's what he was doing for a while. Well, and how do you say to that guy, no, we're not going to allow you to do it because this other guy on the other end of the card
and
might not do it as safely as he should.
I mean, look at Anthony Johnson. Now he's fighting at heavyweight. He was a welterweight for a long time in his UFC.
But he missed weight like six times.
He kept missing and missing. So finally to the point where it's like, hey, you have to go fight Arlovsky.
We've talked about day of weigh-ins. And a lot of folks are saying, look, you're going to make that 10 times more dangerous because you're going to have guys who are cutting and then never rehydrating.
And those fights are going to be awful. That's not the answer.
You're
going to
what I'm asking.
You're going to have tired-ass fighters who cut 40 pounds, who haven't slept, who are droopy-eyed and sleep in the corner. In between. That's going to be terrible. I'm not saying that they even need to do anything. But when you see a story like this, you can't help but ask questions because you're responsible. I'm sorry. Your success makes you responsible for what's happening below you. Not that you need to act on it, but if you don't think that those kids are throwing everything they possibly can to win these fights at the amateur and then pro level to get to the UFC, you're clearly delusional.
Is there something they can do, though?
Yeah.
I'm literally asking, what can they do? Because I think this is one where they're between that rock and the hard place. Yes, because God forbid this were to happen to one of the lower weight guys, lower card guys.
Sure,
and it could. I mean, I mentioned the camp. This is the same camp this guy died in. Jose Aldo's in that camp.
Yep, Barao,
and Barao's in that camp. So you could conceivably see where a UFC would pick another fighter out of that camp to fill out a card. That guy dies going into a UFC card. That's a bad thing. But what do you do about it? How do you make sure? I mean, they're in the U.S., so the diuretic problem should be taken care of.
Should be, but it, as the story will illustrate, Ken, and as you said, and Sean, as you said, he was taking him in his camp, didn't even know. So, I mean, you clearly could maybe take it. Maybe you don't take it close enough to the fight so they can pick up on it, but maybe you did at some point and still damaged your body enough.
Well, okay, so I'm going to put myself in Joe Silva's shoes, okay? So I do a fight card. So what I'll do is I'll delegate. I'll go to all the trainers out there or managers or trainers, say, hey, guys, you need to send me this information. Otherwise, your guy doesn't fight. This is what I want. One, I want to know when your fight camp starts. Two, prior to that day, I want to know what his weight is. And then every week of every Friday of that whole camp, you're going to send me another weigh-in picture or video.
Yeah, but you put that onus on the fighters. You're just going to have fighters.
No, I said put it on the managers and trainers.
You know, I call that the same difference. If you've got a manager who's got a guy who's maybe 20 pounds off a month out, he's not going to think a thing of it, even though the UFC wants to know that info.
I'm not saying that there's a number that you got to cut off. Oh, no, he's 30 pounds over. No, we're not using him. I'm saying monitor it so that it looks healthy.
That happen, though. You put some liability on UFC because maybe UFC says, oh, okay, he's 30 pounds. I know he can do that. Guy ends up dying or something happens in training. Then somebody's looking back at the UFC and going, you knew he was 30 pounds off 3 weeks ago. And even though for fighters and a lot of people in the fight industry, that's a reasonable number, that's a bad scene for prying eyes of the media.
I understand what you're saying, but if it is 30 pounds, there is a nice, smooth progression of the weight loss. It's not going to be a drastic, like, you know, 18 pounds.
That should happen, and that's what's supposed to happen, but if it doesn't, something goes bad. They're not looking at the fact that the UFC was looking at this ramp down. They're looking at the fact that the UFC knew a guy was 30 pounds off and didn't try to stop the fight, so to speak.
And we will obviously continue this one, but something I wanted to talk about and I wanted us to kind of tap on. If you want to join the conversation, you can do it on Facebook. Search WOW Show. Do it on Twitter as well. Part of the Fight Fans Radio Network and iHeart Radio. You can find us there as well and on iTunes and Stitcher. Lots of places to find us. We will see you next week. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Follow our Twitter account at Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans and Sean Dizay. Just a little bit over a minute left. Want to cover a bit of news that I would like you to be aware of. Michael Bisping has been a dear friend to the show. He recently had to step out of that bout with Mark Munoz, been replaced by Lyoto Machida because of the continuing problems with his eye. Last night, was admitted for emergency surgery on his eye. So we hope him the best, because that has to be an absolutely terrifying, terrifying place to be. Being not only, I mean, fighter is kind of irrelevant at this point, but being a person whose sight is at risk at this point and having your second look at your eye. So we hope Michael Bisping the best, and cannot wait to see him back in the octagon. So reach out to him on Twitter, wish him the best, and we hope to hear from him soon here on the show. Two more real quick things. Cain Velasquez just awarded his black belt yesterday, and it's now official. UFC 169, Mir and Overeem has been moved from 167 to 169, and that will be headlined by Jon Jones and Glover Teixeira. And then after that, probably the Gustafsson rematch, but who knows? I guess we'll wait and see. Follow everything on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior, part of the Fight Fans Radio Network and iHeartRadio, your MMA show.